I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hey there, I'm Brad. I'm about to win the Tuesday Night Bowling League Championship. I'm also a highway worker for the Ohio Department of Transportation. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can bowl the winning strike with my buddies.
Remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 25 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. With me is Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle_Vasude, the number one on Twitter, and Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere at @JaredKimber. And what we do in this podcast is that we take any random cricket category and we draft our top five or top six for that category in a snake-style draft competition. So basically, the order of picks goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1. The topic for today is most iconic T20, men's T20 World Cup moments. And with the T20 World Cup coming up, it made absolute sense to go this direction. And Estelle has picked number one. So any guesses, Jared, what she's going to go with?
I'm hoping it's something so random. I know how much he was fearing picking number one in this. So I can't wait for like Angelo Matthews catch.
Saving a six.
In the West Indies. It was. Do you know, I actually think that's a really important moment in cricket, but it's obviously no one gives a shit. But I can't wait for it to be your number one pick.
Yeah. This is the obvious one, of course.
I'm going with the most obvious one. That particular moment, I guess you can call it, you can name it different things. Misbah's sweep.
Okay.
Or we can say
Misbah's lap.
Yes, Misbah's lap.
Misbah's lap.
Yeah.
Or just basically the moment that the first T20 World Cup was won, right?
Mm.
Started things off. I think before that, the Indian cricket board wasn't completely sold on the format. And then
they voted against it. They voted against it for that World Cup. And then they told their star players they didn't have to go. I mean, yes, that's about as against it as you can. I mean, other than the fact they sent a team, that's about as against it as you could be, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I would say that them winning that tournament, it's changed the landscape of how T20 cricket has moved, right? So I don't think you can look past that as the number one pick.
No.
I saw some lists online when I Googled this, and there was a couple of people who didn't have it as number one, and I was like, what are we thinking here? How on earth is that not? It's one of the most important moments in cricket, right? Like, I would say it and the Kapil Dev catch are, you know, two of the things that, because of what India has become in cricket, become so much more important than, you know, just other moments, because they changed the entire sport. Plus, you know, we all watched that live. It was incredibly dramatic, right? It was just it was like he was winning that game in a World Cup final, even if we didn't call it a World Cup at that time. But, you know, he was winning a game in the World Cup. We were all like, oh my God, he's going to win. oh shit, he's out. It felt so bizarre.
Yeah, and the stakes do not get any higher, right? India and Pakistan in a World Cup final in a year where both of them got knocked out in the group stages in the ODI World Cup. I think that's important to mention because the fans were starved and kind of let down as well. And then again, India was winning that game way before, right? Irfan Pathan had wrecked Pakistan.
Yeah.
But Misbah brought them back out of nowhere. And to his great misfortune, people remember the scoop but forget the innings, right? When he slammed Harbhajan for three sixes. That was huge. And then with 12 remaining in the final over, with that Asif edge for four, if you remember. Remember? 13 remaining. Joginder Sharma bowls a wide up front. You're thinking, okay, now Misbah has this because Joginder isn't their best bowler. And he slams him for a six down the ground. After that, when Srisant took that catch and Misbah attempted that lap, which, by the way, was a very successful shot for him. It's not like he just randomly attempted it. He really felt confident playing that shot. It is an iconic moment. I'm glad Estelle took it because I didn't really didn't want to take it, right? I mean,
he
I'm
just relived the entire game.
Yeah. I'm going to give everyone a disclaimer. This podcast is going to be very biased for me. I'm wearing Pakistan's 2019-20 World Cup jersey, okay? Specifically. So don't hound me for that. But yeah, thank you, Estelle. Like, you saved me.
I think also it's funnier because like T20 cricket was like launched by perhaps one of the most boring cricketers we've ever seen, right? Like there's something kind of cool about that, you know. And if you think about it, there's, you know, the first World Cup innings in One Day World Cup was Sunil Gavaskar blocking out a draw. And then you have Misbah starting T20. There's something kind of cool about the way that cricket keeps. I think was it Bill Laurie face the first ball in ODI cricket as well? Like we keep starting these big events with in the weirdest way possible. Anyway,
yeah.
I think number two is also pretty obvious. It's remember the name. Mm. This one will actually, I think there's a couple of different ways of getting this on, but I was there. I was at that game and I was incredibly confident in the West Indies. And I remember, oh God, I forget the English cricket writer's name, but he worked for one of the smaller newspapers. And he kept looking at me going, why do you think they're going to win this? And I said, you just have to trust me. There's the way that they play, their ability to string sixes together means that this isn't the kind of chase that you think it is. And, you know, I remember when Carlos Brathwaite played the lap, I think it was off Chris Jordan or David Willey before that. Mm. And I was saying to him, they think about this game in a completely different way than anywhere else. They are counting how many balls they have left and how many boundaries they need off those balls. And he was looking at me like I was an alien. And then that over happened. And watching it with someone who didn't understand T20 cricket, right? Because that wasn't his job. Like, you know, he was a test writer. I'm watching it with someone who didn't understand T20 cricket, but being in the ground as well was one of the most remarkable things I've ever been involved in. I can still remember the exact angle I saw the shots from, right? You know, so for me, remember the name was absolutely great. And, you know, I interviewed Carlos about it years, like a few months later. Actually, it might have even been later than that. And he was kind of already bored of talking about it, but it's a real shame. And I think he distances himself a little bit from it because he wants to be seen as more than just that one innings. But it would be, you could almost write an entire book based on those four balls because the team that they ended up beating was the team that changed probably white ball cricket and red ball cricket when it comes to batting forever. And they were watching Carlos Brathwaite do that to them. Owen Morgan is the architect and he's the one who can't do anything. Ben Stokes, who everyone will tell me what a great clutch player Ben Stokes is. You know, there's four pretty good examples of him not being clutch in that over, if we're being honest. It's just, it was an incredible moment. And I've been lucky to be at some incredible games like the Harmanpreet game and, you know, the 2019 World Cup final. But I don't think I've ever been at anything like that Carlos one where it felt so surprising and so inevitable at the exact same time.
And plus, it was such an iconic moment in commentary as well, right?
Yeah. I didn't hear the commentary for years. So you guys all remember it as Remember the Name.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the commentary was until I watched the first replay, right? Like for me, it was being there and hearing the entire crowd, you know, lift themselves up.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like high up on my list as well. Probably would have made number two for me because I was going to go for a bias pick for number one. I still am. But both of those moments, it makes complete sense for them to be the first two moments, right? Because they had such a massive impact. Like, Brathwaite made people believe it's never over until it's over. Yeah. And just the legend of West Indian T20 cricket, it was kind of cemented over there. That
was the peak of it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then they always had those dances and songs. I think that World Cup had the champion song. So it kind of adds to the moment. But yeah, I mean, it very well could have been number one as well. It could have usurped the Misbah scoop. That's how big or massive Brathwaite's four sixes versus Stokes were. And yeah, remember the name. Anyway, I got two. And my first one is going to be an extremely biased pick. I'm going to stay true to my jersey. And I'm going to go Shahid Afridi's knockout punch in the 2009 semi and final, both with bat and ball. I know this is a more of a, you know, elongated moment. If I had to pick one particular moment in both of those performances, it would be when Afridi got Gibbs and de Villiers versus South Africa, because that was huge. That was where they, like, Pakistan all of a sudden stamped their authority, being absolute crap in that tournament prior. They had one really good game versus New Zealand, and I think they had one good game versus Bangladesh. They almost lost everything else, right? I think they just beat the Netherlands apart from that. So one of those tournaments where they peaked at the right moment. Razak came into the team, but Afridi being promoted to first drop by Yunus Khan was a revelation for Pakistan in those two games. I think I'm quite sure he scored 50s in both versus South Africa.
I think he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, Sri Lanka in the final. And he basically also went for no runs. We speak of the wickets, but he was very, very economical as well. And I mean, there were a lot of good things that went right for Pakistan in that tournament, but it was just Shahid Afridi. That was Shahid Afridi's T20 World Cup. And that's my number one pick.
I remember that World Cup for, like, the amount of times he had his arms above his head. Yeah. And he's always trying to do a really, really cool celebration, but he was so excited he could never make it work. do you guys know what I mean? I think I wrote about it at the time. It was like he tried to put the hands up, like, and, you know, in almost Imran Khan style, or was a Makarem style, but then his head would be like, guys, did you see that? Did you see what I did? Did everyone see what I did? And it's kind of like, it was just, it was just absolutely incredible to be a part of that. And, and to watch those games and to watch how he did in them. I thought it was brilliant. It's not a moment, but it felt like that second half of that tournament. So the first half of that tournament was kind of Chris Gayle and Tillakaratne Dilshan.
Yes.
And the second part of that tournament, Afridi just went, no, it's mine and I'm going to take it home. Just absolutely remarkable cricket from him. And he was, 7 or 8 years past his peak, maybe, or, you know, 5 years maybe past his peak by that stage.
Not what as a leg spinner.
But as a batter. Mm. Like, what would he have been like if we'd seen World Cups during his peak? And Andrew Simons and Sehwag and those sorts of guys and Sanath Jayasuriya, we Klusner, they all played T20 cricket, but we didn't really see them at their peak and they would have been, all of them would have been way bigger stars if T20 had come around in their peaks.
Plus, like, Afridi was the player of the tournament in 2007. So Pakistan lost that World Cup. It probably never felt good, right? This was his World Cup. He kind of owned the stage. And Bumble's commentary, I'll never forget that. Shahid Afridi, big man, big player. It's a leg by, who cares? And also, it's very important to remember that this is not too long after the Sri Lankan attack, right? So Pakistan cricket was really in a lot of turmoil at this point. And a lot of people had also written it off that this is probably it. And then they go and win a T20 World Cup, which is as Pakistan can get. But yeah, I mean, for me, on a personal level, nothing exceeds that moment. But both of the moments that you guys named are definitely bigger more iconic moments than that one. So I've gone with one good Pakistan moment. I'm going to go with one bad Pakistan moment. Hussey destroying Syed Ajmal is moment number two for me. And look, anyone watching that game would have thought that Pakistan almost have this in the bag. I mean, they scored 190 in an era where Pakistan scoring 190 meant, a victory for them, more or less.
They would be happy to score 190 now, if we're being honest.
Basically, yeah. I mean, the Akmal brothers did really well. Umar Akmal destroyed Dirk Nannis, but then what Hussey did. And before Hussey, it was Cameron White who kind of set it up for Hussey.
Yeah.
But you needed, 23, 24 runs in that final over? We're talking about peak Syed Ajmal over here, on top of his game. No one can hit him at that point. A lot of people, criticize Shahid Afridi for giving Ajmal that over, but I think it was perfectly fine. Like, Ajmal was, or he deserved that over. He was that caliber of a player. And Hussey just absolutely took him apart. And everyone was just left in shock for a bit. And then I remember, I think it was Michael Clark, he came out and said, or was it someone else? But basically the words were that Mike Hussey is a freak of nature. That's exactly what Mike Hussey did that day. And, you know, we have the Brathwaite Sixes, but Hussey's Sixes were the Brathwaite Sixes before the Brathwaite Sixes, if you think about it. And that was huge. Australia didn't win that World Cup, but the manner in which they won that semi-final, I think that's the biggest thing people remember from that edition of the T20 World Cup. That and KP.
Yeah, and that was the time where basically Gull and Ajmal were the best kind of death bowlers, right? Or the guys who would restrict teams really well. So, I mean, I agree with you on that. You know, a lot of people look back and think, okay, why did he bowl a spinner in that last over, right? But it was just brilliant hitting from Hussey.
No, absolutely.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
All right.
Is it back? It's calling me, isn't it? Okay, cool.
So wait, interestingly enough, we've got a moment each from the first three T20 World Cups. 2007, 2009, and 2010. We have a moment each from them. So let's see which other editions make it to our list.
I am going to... Sorry, I'm just going through to see. Yeah, so I'm going to go... Sadly, I'm going to double up on one of the World Cups. I'm going to go back to the 2009 edition. And I'm going to say the Dutch beating England.
Yeah. At Lord's.
Yeah. I've obviously done a lot of work with this. There's a chapter in my upcoming book about it. It's, you know, incredible. I've been lucky enough to be able to talk to, you know, a lot of the players involved. If Dutch cricket goes on to be quite big, I would love to write an entire book where this is the basis, because I do think it was such an extraordinary moment. But I was there, but it was also one of the last games I went to as a fan. So it was me, my wife, and one of our friends who went, and it was rainy and it was ordinary. And I think it was, there was supposed to be a pre-match celebration, opening ceremony. And if I remember, maybe it was canceled or maybe it was half done or something because it was so wet. We all thought, everyone in the crowd thought it was going to be rained out. So we weren't exactly, no one was really like feeling it or whatever. And then England came out and they played really, really bland T20 cricket. It's funny. I remember talking to Dirk Nattis and he said, you know, they were scoring really well, but they weren't hitting many sixes. So we didn't kind of feel like they were getting away. But it was a great opening partnership where they did it. And then that last over is one of the most incredible last overs you'll ever see. I don't know why the ICC did this. For years, they had the entire game on their Facebook page and they took it down about a year and a half ago. It's a real shame because I promise you, I've watched that game from beginning to end so many times. And I think... I'd have to go back and have a look at my book, but I think England missed something like 9 run out chances.
Yeah, especially towards the end. Yeah.
Well, they missed about 7 in the last over, but they missed a bunch before that as well. And, you know, you had, I've forgotten his name, but the guy who made the runs for the Dutch.
Peter Boren.
No. Boren came in. Boren made a couple. Boren made like 20. He came in as a pinch hitter and then couldn't get the ball away. Tim. Oh, my God.
It wasn't Ryan Tendiscato. It wasn't him that game.
No. So it was a tail ender, right? No. It was. So they had two guys who basically, you would never be able to get these guys just because of how rare it sort of was that they did it. So one guy was called Darren Rikus. And he was like this big dude who slogged at the top. And his dad was actually outside the ground, I believe, selling tickets during the tournament. So they would get tickets to, I think the Dutch played Bangladesh or something in one of the warm-up games, and after them was India-Pakistan or something like that in a practice game. And Rikus's dad was outside selling tickets from the Dutch team, right? And then he was in the ground screaming, "That's my son in at Lourdes." So Rikus made 20 off 13 and got them off to a great start. But the guy I was thinking of is Tom de Groot, right? So he made 49 off 30, and I've been through line by line of his career. He never did anything like this at any other stage against way shitter teams in way less pressure than he did on that particular day. And then, of course, you got that final over, and they were keeping Ryan Tendiscata back for the end. But then, and I've never talked to Tendo about this, but I know Tendo a little bit now because we do commentary together for TalkSport. I would love to get his view, because he kept mishitting the ball, every ball. And this is the most important thing, is that Stuart Broad bowled one of the greatest overs at the death that anyone could ever bowl, except for the fact that he could not keep the ball in his hand when he hit the stumps, or he couldn't throw it directly when he needed to throw it directly. The whole thing was absolutely incredible. And I remember that game forever. And as I said, I've watched it probably five or six times. I love going back and watching that. I never watched the England innings. That bores the crap out of me.
Also, probably not the only moment that might be discussed in this podcast which involves Stuart Broad.
It's very possible he might pop up the edge, yes.
Good one, though. All right, you have another one, no? Okay. Or is it Estelle?
No, Estelle's got two.
Yeah, Estelle's got two.
I didn't want to go first because I knew that I would have to pick that moment as number one. But as number two, I will go Behram's route and pick something that is close to my heart and go with the 2014 win. The moment I would pick is Tisara Pereira slapping the ball straight over Ashwin's head for six to win the World Cup. At that point, Sri Lanka had been in the 2007 ODI World Cup final, 2019 T20 World Cup final, 12 World Cup final, and then 14 was the fourth one. And you had the sense that, you know, that was the last chance for guys like TM Dilshan, Mahela Jayawardena, Kumar Sangakkara to really have a trophy. And just the way things panned out, right? Because in 2012, it was a very similar score that they were chasing. And Sangha kind of played a similar innings and we ended up losing. But this time, thanks to Tisara Pereira, they were able to kind of end that drought and give Sri Lanka a world title since 1996.
18 years, wasn't it? Yeah.
28. No, is it not? 18. It is 18.
Yeah. 18. Yeah.
It was on my list and it was really high as well. So it's unlike the Afridi pick of Behram, this one actually probably has slightly more. It has slightly more reason to be high, I would say. I think the Afridi pick should still be in the top 15 because I do think it was an important moment in T20 cricket. But Behram obviously took it too high. But this one, I think, is probably more fair. I don't know if you guys remember this. And, well, you probably wouldn't. Do you guys know of the writer Wright Thompson?
No.
I've heard of him.
So Wright Thompson is probably the most famous sports writer in America and maybe one of the most famous sports writers in the world. He's probably the highest paid sports writer in the world. You know, he's like legitimately ESPN's main guy. And so he wrote the big piece on Mahela and Kumar, which I think came out in 2012 when he wrote that. Estelle might remember, but it was a huge piece that, you know, that no one had really written about them that much, and he spent a lot of time with both of them during that 2014 final. He said if you sent him your phone number, if you're an American and you wanted to know why this mattered, give send him your phone number and he will call you up during the game and tell you why this was a big deal. And he did. All these American fans were like, okay, tell us why Kumar and Mahela winning this World Cup is a big deal. And he took them through why it mattered. And if that sort of tells you how big a thing this was. And I wrote about it at the time and people got really, really upset of like, oh, it's just another win by another cricket nation. I was like, it's not. Right. This is something else. And you guys have to understand what this means to Sri Lanka as a country. Also, we didn't realize at the time because we didn't cover cricket correctly. Sri Lanka was in an all-time white ball era, right? Yeah. They were the, you know, for about what, 6 years, Estelle? Absolutely incredible at white ball cricket. And they won fucking nothing, right? They won nothing at all. And you go back and you look at those early, I did it recently for T20. I think they still have the highest win percentage in T20 cricket in the World Cup. Right. Maybe until that last World Cup, or it might still be. And a lot of it is from that early period when they almost never fucking lost. They were incredible. Yep. And it took that long to be able to do it. And that team, you know, there's so many of those guys, you know, that never got the big trophy that the 96 team did. So it was really, really important. And I remember being in Sri Lanka in 2012. So I went the semifinal when they won that final. Colombo was rocking like I've never seen a city rock before. They lost that final and the city was dead, right? There was just, it was almost like no one knew what to do that night. And so 4 years later to have that win, I think was absolutely, it was so important for Sri Lanka. And I think that doesn't get talked about enough of how important that was to that group and also to Sri Lanka as a nation at that time.
It was my number three pick, 100%. I wanted Estelle to take it, though, deep down in my heart. Because
I wanted to take it so she didn't have it, but I really liked the Dutch game.
No, and I mean, it goes without saying that that Sri Lankan team, it was their golden generation. It was a better team than 96. You missed out 2011, Estelle. They also lost that final, right? So it was 2007, 2009.
For my memory.
She can't remember all the times they lost Bayram. It was quite a lot.
07 ODI World Cup, 2009 T20 World Cup, 2012 T20 World Cup, 2011 ODI World Cup. So fifth time lucky, right? Fifth time's a charm. And I mean, for someone, it was even personal for me because I was I was a Sangakkara super fan. Still am. Yeah. Love the guy. So I really wanted that title for Sri Lanka. And in that final in particular, when Thisara Pereira, I mean, sure, the four that won Sri Lanka the game over Ashwin's head is iconic. But before that, when he came and he hit a few sixes, I think that was really the moment where you felt like, oh my God, they're going to do it. Because there was a point in that final, I don't know if you guys remember, where they needed like 45 off the last five.
Yeah.
You don't really know what's going to happen back in that day on a slower surface, right? Plus, Sri Lanka, as you said, had kind of cocked up the previous World Cup final in a similar situation. So it was massive, and it really, like, even the whole captaincy thing. Remember how Malinga was captain towards the end of it?
Yeah.
That was also such a great subplot. And I mean, even that embrace between Sangha and Kohli, it tells you a lot. And the mutual respect that everyone had for Sangakkara, that generation deserved a trophy. And that's why this is definitely one of the most iconic moments in T20 World Cup history, without doubt.
Okay, so my next one is another Sri Lankan one from the same World Cup. I'm going with Ranganathan's 5-for-3.
Okay.
I think he was in England like 2 days or 3 days before that, or he wasn't, you know, he wasn't really an integral part of that team. They just brought him in for that same, what was kind of a almost unofficial quarterfinal, wasn't it? And with the wicket of McCullum, just getting him stumped, I think everything changed. Suddenly, you know, New Zealand was seeing demons in that pitch where there were none. And to have a guy who's that kind of understated player who no one, at least in limited overs cricket, nobody really, you know, would have paid too much attention to him at that point, to have him come in and put on that kind of performance. If Sri Lanka lost that, I think they were out. So it was just an incredible performance. Any Sri Lankan fan who you talk to, that's probably really high on their list, because he basically brought them from, you know, defending 119. I suppose now it's kind of almost impossible, but even then, that was not a kind of par total, right? It was way below par. But what he did was just incredible.
I had that on my list. I think it's one of the more famous spells, and kind of came from nowhere and changed the trajectory of that tournament.
particularly Herath, you know, getting that 5-for-3, right? Just like Estelle said, someone who is, you know, very well known in the test circuit. He does get his dues over there, but as a T20 cricketer, no one really thinks of Herath. And for him to make this
list, bowling?
Yeah, probably, right? It's crazy.
Okay, so I'm up next. And I had both of those on my list, actually. And I will leave the next obvious one to Bayram because I think he's desperate to say it. And I will go West Indies dual title in 2016. So I know I've already mentioned the Carlos Brathwaite thing, but the other big story of that day is that both their teams won a final on the same day. Mm. And, you know, I would say probably, you know, for most of the time between 2000 and 2012, we were being told that West Indies cricket was dead. And then suddenly you had this incredible celebration in 2016 where both of their teams managed to win. And if you look back and think of who they beat, I think it gets even more massive because you have they're beating England, who are about to go on a run and be the first ever dual World Cup winners. And the women's team beat Australia, who were even better again. Right. Mm. You know, so it was such a, you know, looking back on it, it's, you know, if you look at form guide of winning, it was absolutely incredible. But the fact that they celebrated it as male and female together, and there was something to do with West Indies cricket at that time where the men's and women's team were just a lot closer than most countries. It's a bit more common now, but it wasn't really common back then. They were separate entities and they went in this direction, they went in that direction. That wasn't the case for that West Indies team. And, you know, the women staying there and you know, celebrating that, and the men celebrating the women, you know, the whole thing for me was, you know, as someone who had been told West Indies cricket was dead, West Indies cricket was dead, West Indies cricket was dead, it to then go to that kind of a celebration of the way they played cricket and everything, I thought it was absolutely huge. And we'll never have it again, right? We're never going to have the Men's and Women's World Cup again on the same day. And it probably wasn't overall, as someone who covered a couple of them, it's probably a good thing that we will never have them again, because it didn't really work. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a great idea. You know, I remember doing it in the 2012 tournament. And it was a fucking pain because you're writing your report, trying to get it finished from the women's game before the men's game you're trying to interview the winning players, knowing that if they take too long with their answers, you've got to go out and do the next game. The women had to be rushed off the field. You know, the men were annoyed with the way they had to warm up.
It was a problem, right? I remember tickets and stuff. Because, I mean, at that point, I didn't really follow much of women's cricket. And I remember, I mean, I went to the semi-final, but we didn't go for the women's game. We went for the men's game. So, like, people who wanted to get tickets for the women's matches probably missed out a lot because everything, it was one ticket, right?
So exactly. Yeah.
Most people turn up at 7:30 instead of the earlier game. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it just didn't work. But the one time it worked was the fact that the West Indies managed to have a day to themselves. And who knows what West Indies cricket will be in the future, right? That day is, and as someone who you know, has spent a lot of time, you know, working with West Indian cricketers and people, that meant a lot to them that day. And it was very special to be able to be there for that particular entire day, even if, you know, it shouldn't have happened and hopefully never happens again.
Yeah, I mean, Jared, truth be told, you could have clubbed this with the Brathwaite sixes, but I'm happy you didn't. I'm happy you went.
I think it's different than the Brathwaite sixes, because I think the Brathwaite sixes is a moment on its own. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something else. But I could have. I like both of them separately.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8, cricket intelligence for you every day.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did, because you left the Pakistan one for me. And this was obviously going... I didn't go for this as my second pick, because I was like, okay, Behram, let's not be too biased now. But I had to. I obviously have to mention Pakistan beating India by 10 wickets in Dubai in 2021. Look, for anyone who's followed any cricket will know that Pakistan and India's World Cup record is, heavily skewed in India's favor. And up until this point, Pakistan had never defeated them in any World Cup ever. Even now, it's Pakistan's only World Cup win in any of those two formats, 50 overs or 20 overs till date. And it was just the kind of atmosphere that had built around the game prior. Yeah. Teams had cancelled their tours to Pakistan. And it, as someone who now lives here and at that point wasn't living there, but is obviously deeply invested in the sport, it just felt, you know, unfair that, okay, Pakistan has done all this work to get international cricket back home and teams have pulled out. Okay, fine, the New Zealand one is a different story. The threat came out to be nothing, but at least there was a threat. The England one just was nothing, right? Mm. England just literally copped out. And that really felt personal, because up until that point, it felt like England or the ECB were really, like, you know, helping Pakistan out in many ways. So there was this whole sentiment that Pakistan should show the world what they can do on the field. And then they go on and beat India by 10 wickets. If I had to pick a moment in that game, it has to be Shaheen's opening spell, right? When he gets Rohit and KL Rahul. And Nasir Hussain's commentary that they cannot play him. I watched that game as a fan in this basement restaurant in Toronto, full of Pakistanis. That's it. It was one of the best moments in my life, because everyone was just losing their shit. And then afterwards, everyone went in their cars and, you know, had the flags out. And then you'd see random Indian people in their cars. And you know, everyone was smiling. Canada's a fun place. There's no animosity over there. You kind of like, no one can be angry
in Canada.
Yeah. But even like every Indian person that I saw that day were kind of appreciative, you know, because it just was that kind of a game. And there was a lot of like trash talk in the media as well. So it was nice for Pakistan to actually end up on the winning side of that for once, because it's usually never like that. But I mean, in terms of iconic moments, it has to be there. Like, bias aside, it's got to be there in the top 15.
No, it's huge, because it's Pakistan's first win over India, right? Like, it's kind of, it doesn't really mean that much to the tournament, that game. Although I suppose it is a reason India didn't go on. But, you know, it's not like important from that point of view. But from the point of view of World Cup history, it's a really, really important game. And the fact that Pakistan did it so easily after all those times, it wasn't like they got there at the end and they stole a single or something. It was like, it was an absolute blitz.
And I mean, also the scenes that followed, right? Rizwan and Babar with Kohli, they made for great like moments. Like, people save those pictures, and that's all. That's wallpaper stuff right there. And yeah, I mean, for any Pakistan cricket supporter, they might have won a few World Cups, but that victory is something that definitely, you know, ranks high up there. All right, so I'm going to do the balancing act again, guys. did one good Pakistan moment. I'm going to do one really shit one as well. And I think that this really does... Like, when you think of the 2021 World Cup, you think of two moments. You think of Pakistan beating India, and then you think of Matthew Wade. And Matthew Wade is someone who was a cancer survivor, you know. And he's someone who wasn't an automatic pick for the squad. Some people might have even questioned, you know, his place in the team.
I'm still questioning his place in the team.
I mean, right now I am too. It's 2024 now. That was 2021.
He made runs in that game, I still don't think he should have played in that game to win that game.
Australia weren't talked about in that tournament as heavy favorites, right? In fact, if anything, people thought that maybe South Africa or the West Indies fare better than their squad overall. But it was a really strong squad. And that game in particular, Australia, sure, 176 wasn't the most, you know, largest total or whatever. But at the start of the game, Pakistan took early wickets. And then when Maxwell fell, when Shadab got Maxwell, all of a sudden you're like, okay, like this is probably it. Wade and Stoinis and Pakistan will take it from here. But they didn't. And Wade, you know, scooping slash ramping, whatever you want to call it, when he did that to Shaheen Afridi, the one of the bowlers of the tournament, I think that was special. In terms of personal stories, it was massive for Wade. And Australia had never won a T20 World Cup. That is the day Australia completed, you know, their, well, now they also have a World Test Championship, but they had held the mace before, so it still kind of counted. And then they had their complete set in limited overs cricket. And now you see Australia taking T20 cricket seriously as well. Before, like, even at that point, Jared, I remember, they didn't really care much, right? I was even talking to Australians. They were like, yeah, whatever, like, you know, we'll see. But that kind of changed everything for them in that regard. And I mean, it was massive. That was bigger than the final, I think.
It was ridiculous because in the West Indies, they played a series before then. And I don't think they took over their full strength side. And so Mitchell Marsh batted at number three. And then he made some runs and I'm like, oh, he should be there number three. Then they got to the tournament and they lost the game and they dropped him. Right. And they had no, and I promise you, they are very honest about this behind the scenes. They weren't really ahead of the tactics. They didn't really have a set game plan. They didn't know what was going on. And let's be honest, Pakistan was smashing them in that game, right? Like you sort of said, oh, you know, they get through. They were so far behind. And there's a shot really early on that Marcus Stoinis hits. I think it was off Shadab. And deep mid-wicket was in the wrong position, slightly off the rope.
Yes.
And if he'd been standing on the rope, who was it?
I think it was Asif Ali, I think. I want to say Asif Ali. Hassan Ali also dropped one of Wade's. I think it was Wade. But
yeah.
People like butchered him for it. But I remember this particular moment where I was like, oh my God, like stand on the rope, right? Like, what are you doing?
And I've done a forensic retelling of it. You could see he's in the wrong spot on the boundary. And so it came from nowhere. But also like Wade had been smashing the ball in opening the batting in the Big Bash for a while. And every time he played for Australia, it hadn't really worked. And he was basically there because they didn't have a better wicketkeeper batter to come, and they just needed someone in. It wasn't like it was literally that spot was vacant, and he came from absolutely nowhere. And it was incredible hitting too. I mean, they won that easily from a position where they were going to lose easily.
It's crazy. And you know, they were what, 5 down for 80 odd. Warner was playing really well, and then he got out where he wasn't out. Remember that?
Yeah,
it actually didn't hit the bat, and he was given out. So that drama happened. But ultimately, you know, Australia. You can call it whatever, the sporting culture, the mentality. They just have a penchant to come out on top in these big moments. It was basically a hussy repeat, what Wade did. Yeah. And you've got to doff your hat to them that they somehow managed to inflict this sort of terror or torture upon other teams and ruin their years.
I love the idea that you have four Pakistani picks. And you'll be absolutely murdered for them. But actually, in two of them... Yeah. Pakistan did not do well.
Yeah, I think it checks out, right? And these moments all deserve to make it as well. So I don't think I'm doing a bad job over here.
I'm going to go with Yuvraj Singh's six sixes, which I think for Indian fans probably would be slightly higher. But weird looking back. I don't know if it stands up. I mean, it was a huge moment. But if you look at some of the other things that have happened afterwards and the way we think about cricket now, it maybe wasn't. It was kind of seen as like, oh, that's a bit of fun at the time. But I know certainly for Indian fans, they would have that, you know, really, really high. But I think it's a really important thing. And again, we never really saw the best of Yuvraj in T20 cricket. He didn't really take it all that seriously when he played it. And if you look at his IPL numbers, he had a couple of good years. But if he had grown up playing T20 cricket, he's again would have been someone who would have done incredible things consistently. You know, I mean, Yuvraj Singh is basically what, you know, like what Shivam Dubey dreams of being, you know, right? Like, I mean, is that that's kind of what Yuvraj Singh could have been. And we didn't see enough of it, but the six sixes. And isn't it great that I have two moments in my list of Stuart Broad not doing well?
Yeah, I mean, it had to make it, right? I was expecting someone to pick it. And Ravi Shastri on comms for it also, I think, adds to the flavor, right? He was brilliant. And I mean, brute force. That's how you describe those sixes. Yuvraj, when he hit them, it felt like he was unleashing, you know, the worst parts of hell on the cricket ball at that point. And that third six is my favorite. I even literally picked Yuvraj for down the ground, inside out over cover in the previous podcast because of that third six in the six sixes. And I've seen him go inside out over cover a lot of times. But yes, I mean, it would be unfair if that moment didn't make it at all. Maybe a bit too late for Indian fans, but I think this so much has happened in eight editions of the T20 World Cup that it kind of makes sense that it was a late pick.
Yeah, I think it has to be on the list. It was on mine. I think I would have gone with it next.
Yeah, same.
But Behram had to go with four Pakistani picks. So,
Of course I did.
No. Two pro-Pakistani and two anti-Pakistani picks.
Yes.
Okay, so I've got two now, right? To finish things up. Okay, so I'm going with Chris Gayle's 100 against South Africa in the first T20 World Cup. Mm. It was the first game of the tournament as well, right?
Yes. They lost it. The West Indies lost that game.
Yeah, the West Indies lost the game. But it was again one of those moments that kind of announced that this is kind of here to stay, the way he went about things. They got 200 plus, if I'm not mistaken, in that game.
Yeah, just about.
Just crazy hitting. I mean, it's Chris Gayle, right? And I think at that point, it was like when he gets going, there's really nothing you can do to stop him because he was that strong, right? I remember got a triple 100 against Sri Lanka around the same time, if I'm not mistaken, in Test cricket. And just there's nothing the bowlers can do. So home tournament for South Africa, first game of the World Cup, he goes and does that. It's crazy.
Also,
quite similar to McCullum hitting that 150-odd score in the first ever IPL game, right? In a way. Yeah.
So he makes 117. They make 205. Devon Smith, who I can't believe Devon Smith was playing, he made 35 off 34 at the other end. Wow. And no one else scored. And you're right, they lost. But they didn't just lose. I'm just looking it up now. They lost in the 18th over.
Eight wickets, wow. No?
Was it Gibbs who scored big for South Africa? I think it was,
Gibbs made 90 off 55. And then Justin Kemp, who again would have been a great T20 player in a different era, made 46 off 22 balls.
Wow. Remember in the previous Uncovered, you were talking about how South Africans are a certain build? Justin Kemp should be the, mascot for that build.
Yeah, I was going to say poster ambassador. Child, but poster child's poster the wrong child. Phrase for the size of Justin Kemp.
Yeah, poster dude.
Yeah, poster
a
bro.
A bit like David Wiesa, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's probably more
broader.
I was going to say, because David Wiesa is probably a more athletic build, right? That sort of more that sort of V, but big V. Whereas Justin Kemp is more that sort of chunk of beef that they've cut out of a cow. you know, that proper South African. There must be a proper term that the South Africans use. I know they use the phrase proper Dutchman a lot in South Africa, but that's more to do with Afrikaners in general, and that can cover someone like Neil Wagner or Unric Nortje. But there must be a phrase they have for the guys who look like they're just cut out of granite, and they're the same shape in it. Like do you know what I mean? They have no body shape. It's just all like solid, and it's ridiculous. Okay, so what's your last one, Estelle?
My last one. So I have a few remaining, but I'm going to go for this one, and I just want to say this is nothing to do with any rivalries, but I'm going with Bangladesh's choke in 2016 against India.
Nothing to do with any rivalries. It was on my list.
Is that the one where... what's his name, celebrates the win and then they lose.
Mushfiqur Rahim.
Mushfiqur.
Yeah, it's that one because this could have been one of the great moments for Bangladesh in T20 cricket, right? If they had beaten India on that day and they had the match kind of won. And I don't blame him for saying
that. No, they had the game won. They had won the game. Let's be really clear here. Like, he probably shouldn't have done it. But they had the game won. You're right.
Yeah. And they somehow blew it. I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, how the trajectory of that team could have gone if they had won that match. And in the end, now, I mean, we are laughing about it and a lot of people are trolling them, troll them about it, right? But I just think it's one of those moments that kind of sticks in your mind.
Yeah, and I mean, India had already lost to New Zealand. Santner and Sodhi had done a number on them. So had they lost to Bangladesh, they could have been eliminated in home World Cup before the knockouts. So those were the stakes, right? And I mean, anyone with two brain cells at that point thought that, okay, they can't possibly blow it from here. And they did. And I mean, kudos to MS Dhoni for kind of orchestrating that, because a lot of it had to do with his wits. But it is definitely one of the most iconic moments. Like, it's one of the funniest moments as well, in a weird way.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. Cricket intelligence for you every day.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hi, I'm Josie. My daughter turns 5 today. I'm also an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can get home to celebrate with my daughter.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Oh, definitely. So they, so just to remind everyone, they were 136 for 6 coming into the last over, and they needed, I want to say, 11 off that last over. 11 off the fast last over. So Mahmoodulla is facing Hardik and he gets a single off the first ball. And then Mushrika hits two boundaries in a row. And then he starts, dancing, celebrating? I don't know what you would say.
Roaring?
Yeah. And they needed two more runs, of course, at that point. He goes out next ball. Then they actually got Mahmoodulla back on strike, because those were under the old rules. So they got the set batter back on strike and he went out. And then Shuvagata Horn, who I've forgotten existed, who I forgot existed until just now, was run out at the end. I think him and Mustafiza, one of them was run out. I think it was Mustafiza who was run out. But they didn't even get, all they needed was one run for the tie, and they didn't even get the tie on the last three balls. It was absolutely remarkable to lose from that situation and in a World Cup. And as Estelle said, it was a really important moment for Bangladesh cricket at that point. Yeah. And, you know, we all remember being amazed, oh my God, they're going to win. And then suddenly it just went completely pear-shaped.
People were in disbelief. I was in disbelief. Have I actually witnessed this? Like, is this real? And yeah, I mean, it was.
I am going to go, that was your final one, wasn't it? I'm going to go the bowl off in 2007.
Okay. I had
just
that.
Just because we'll probably never have another major bowl off. Mm-hmm. The last bowl off I remember was in professional cricket, anyway, top level professional cricket, was in, I think it was the Blast, where there was all these games that were rained out and they had like an indoor bowl off. And obviously it's probably not the best way of finishing a game. I think the super over is a better option. However, a bowl off is absolutely brilliant, and I wish it would come back just because of how stupid and fantastic it was. I don't know how the Big Bash hasn't brought it in, right? Like, if you're going to flip a bat, you might as well have a bowl off. But then also that the hilarity of the bowl off, of the batters being better at bowling than the bowlers, is still one of the greatest things of all time. I love that. And I love that MS Dhoni worked that out, whereas no one else would have even thought of that as a tactic. So I think the bowl off is absolutely great for no other reason than we just won't have another one. And it was awesome to watch them going about it.
Yeah,
maybe
plus,
they should bring it in for when games are going to be washed out, and you know, maybe that could be a way to decide a game.
Indoor ball off or ball out, whatever it was. Again,
I mean, you have so many games where you know it's the pitch or the outfield is too wet to resume, and games get called off, right?
Yeah.
Then you can just use the pitch,
perhaps. But again, it was a very high-stakes game, that one as well. It was India versus Pakistan. And for the very first time in T20 World Cup cricket, right? Mohammad Asif had done really well up front, and then India, you know, came back. I remember Pakistan's bowlers missing every single one. That's what I remember distinctly about this. And Yeah, of course, like MS Dhoni was like 10 steps ahead of Shoaib Malik, 110%. But it was just another funny moment, which at that point probably didn't seem as funny. But it was this like kind of like penalties in football, but different.
That was what it was based on, right?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting concept.
Yeah.
But of course, super overs are better. And I mean, I had this. I had both this and the last few, the Mushfiqur one. And yeah, I mean, you guys have taken quite a few. Which leaves me with a tough call between two moments from the last World Cup, the 2022 World Cup in Australia. One is an upset, but that team has already gotten its dues in this podcast. So I'm going to go with Virat Kohli versus Pakistan at the MCG. So now I have three.
You're not bad going with Pakistan moments. Beating Pakistan. Zimbabwe, the Pak Bean. You're leaving Pak Bean on the table.
I'm leaving Pak Bean on the table. Shit, I've completely forgot about that.
I'm assuming you, because the Dutch beating South Africa is the other one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the other one.
And I thought you would go that or Pak Bean. And you've gone India beating Pakistan. I mean, that was a big moment too. But
I mean, Kohli's knock is something that no one will ever forget, right? It's one of those things. And
these are your picks. It's all subjective. Yeah. You're allowed to be
honestly,
wrong.
Honestly, I had completely blocked Pak Bean out. So now I am kind of contemplating. But no, I mean, I picked the Kohli moment. I'm going to go with the Kohli moment. And, you know, India had lost that game. They were not going to win it if it was any other batter other than Virat Kohli out there. In the previous podcast, Estelle picked Virat Kohli's, whatever you call it, that shot versus Haris Rauf in which he, you know, came down the ground and kind of heaved him, swatted him over his head for six. It is one of the most remembered shots in history. It is one of the most difficult shots to pull off. I think they had like a percentage for, you know, the success rate of pulling off that shot, particularly versus the express pacer like Haris Rauf. So that was like point something, right? That's how low it was. And Pakistan and India, they had been locking horns frequently up until that point, and it had gotten kind of level. You know, Pakistan were competing really well. They were even winning. And that game, India required, what, 46 of the last three? Virat Kohli pretty much played the best innings he's ever going to play in a T20 game, I think. And MCG, you know, big ground dimensions, the best bowling attack of the tournament. It doesn't get better than that. And yeah, you know what? Now that I've said all of these things, it probably does trump Pak Bean and the Dutch beating South Africa.
The final over. It's still one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Because you mentioned all these things and you haven't talked about the fact that they made their spinner bowl medium pace.
Yeah.
The fact that they kept bowling friggin' waist-high, no balls. The free hit bowled.
Yes.
The Ashwin leave down the leg side. Like, it was absolutely a batshit crazy finish to a game. Even if you took Virat Kohli out. It really was an incredible. And also, Pakistan had the better tournament and they still managed to lose to India from that position, you know, which is after what happened in 2021 where we thought, oh, they've got past all their issues with India. And it's like, no, here's some fresh issues.
Yeah, very, very fresh. And I mean, it was a crazy tournament. Those are the three moments that stand out. Netherlands defeating South Africa, Zimbabwe defeating Pakistan, and that Kohli knock. Weirdly enough, the knockouts aren't really talked about as much.
No. The only other game I would add, just because of it's probably the least safe game I've ever seen played, it's certainly in modern World Cup cricket, is when they tried to get a result between Zimbabwe, South Africa at Hobart when the ground was underwater and no one could stand up on the ground because of how wet it was. And there are all these like South African super fans getting angry with me going, oh, you just want South Africa not to win. I was like, they should not be playing a World Cup on this pitch with this amount of rain. What is wrong with you? You can barely see it on the TV. It was ridiculous. So yeah, there was a few interesting moments there, but yeah, I think, I think the Pak Bean is an interesting one, whether we'll still be talking about the Pak Bean game in 10 years time. Whereas I think that final over, even if you take out Virat's knock, that final over India Pakistan probably does get remembered a little bit longer.
So just on the Pak Bean game, I was in Ireland, Dublin that day with my brother and my cousin, and we were at a Jameson tour at the factory. And we were watching this game, you know, right before the tour, and that happened. And then we were like, oh, all right, like, whiskey sounds nice, right? It should help.
Was there enough whiskey in the Jameson's factory to cover that last over? I just don't think there was. Yeah. We're going to need a bigger distillery.
Yeah, but the Netherlands kind of made up for it, right? So.
Okay, what else we got? I've got Angelo Matthews World Cup semi-final over. where where he takes like a million wickets. We didn't mention that. Somehow we got all the way through this show without Bayram talking about when Amir took 5 wickets in an over, was it?
Yeah, but that was like
five. Not order outs.
It was a group game.
No, it was a terrible game. Yeah. What else? Umar Gul. I thought another Pakistan one. Look at all the, he just left them all on the floor.
I mean, the New Zealand game in which Gul completely wrecked them was on my list. But yeah. I mean, there were other moments that I felt. Like, I really felt that Kohli's not deserved to be there.
I've got 2012 winner of West Indies, which was huge because it was when we all realized how much better they were at T20 cricket than everyone else.
Marlon Samuels.
Ridiculous. And the other one that I had was that England's first World Cup win was actually in the T20 World Cup, but it was before we called them World Cup. And so it's not actually iconic or well-remembered at all. If you ask most English cricket fans when they first won a World Cup, it will be 2019 and they will have completely forgotten about the fact that they won. And the other weird thing about that other tournament was it came 5 minutes after Pakistan's win. Yeah. And so it was in the West Indies, which is a bad time zone for Australia and Asia. So there are so many people that don't watch that tournament. I think that's another, that's the other one that I had on my list that I thought could have been mentioned. But I think it's probably right that it misses out just because I don't think people remember it all that much.
I think that's fair. I mean, I only remember KP and Paul Collingwood, you know, KP's batting, Paul Collingwood lifting the trophy. Tim Bresnan was a part of that team as well. So it was a really random English team.
Michael Lum, Craig Kiesvetter.
Craig Kiesvetter was actually one of the stars of the show.
Michael Yardy, I think, was he around at that stage as well?
Might have been, actually. Yeah. You know? It was random, but it was dominant. Like, England were the best team in that World T20. You mentioned a few that were on my list. Of course, Gull's Pfeiffer versus New Zealand was there. Zimbabwe beating Australia in 2007, when Australia, well, Ricky Ponting in particular, kind of even admitted later on that they'd taken that game lightly. And I think things were said prior to the game. You know,
which
about
game
Zimbabwe
was that? Sorry,
well. Brendan Taylor. Taylor inspired Zimbabwe to a victory over Australia. I think it was in the group stages. So that was quite huge, I think. And RP Singh's spell versus South Africa in the semi-final in 2007. Brilliant to watch. And of course, like, you've got Park Bean, Netherlands beating South Africa. But yeah, I can't really think of any other ones. Marlon Samuels.
I think the Samuels one, for me, I had it on my list in that the way he took apart Lasith Malinga, I think that was a moment that kind of changed the game. Malinga went for 50 plus in his 4 overs and got hit for like 6 or 7 sixers in that innings, which in 2012, he was you know, at his prime, right?
Yeah.
And Marlon Samuels does that against him at home. I think that was one. Park Bean, I think, you know, as an off-field thing, the way it kind of built up on social media was incredible, right? I mean, I'm sure it doesn't feel the same as a Pakistan fan, but like as a neutral.
It was hilarious.
But also, it's kind of like the peak of Zimbabwean cricket in modern times, right? Like, so we joke about it because it was nonsense. Obviously, the Pak Bean, you know, the Mr. Bean side of it was a bit silly. but that was the sort of the peak of where Zimbabwe were as a team in cricket over a long period of time. And they were a really enjoyable team. And do you remember all their fans were traveling around the country with them because they couldn't believe how well the team was doing. And they made the second part of the tournament, and they didn't just trickle in, like, you know, they were doing stuff in it. We were all really excited. They had this incredible bowling attack and then since then it's all gone to shit because I can't find a single batter. And Sikandar Raza is basically their entire team in some games, right? But at that moment we were like, oh, great. Zimbabwe's back. This is really, really cool. And now we've got this stupid story that goes along with it, and they're beating Pakistan. And it was a friggin' dramatic game, right?
Yeah, very dramatic. In fact, Pakistan kind of had it in the bag when Shadab and I think Shan Masood were batting out there, and then they just kind of threw it away. Towards the end, they made it extremely tight, and then I think they needed a 4 off the last delivery, and Shaheen couldn't hit one. It was very dramatic. And the whole World Cup, from a Pakistan lens, was extremely dramatic. Like, oh, Zimbabwe have defeated Pakistan, they're out. Oh, the Netherlands have defeated South Africa, they're back in. They've defeated New Zealand, they're into the final. Also, one other moment that from that World Cup is very iconic is England completely smashing India in the semi, right? Like, that was something straight out of a nightmare for Indian fans. Because what was it, a 10-wicket win? 9-wicket win? Something like that? They chased down 170-odd in like 15 overs.
whatever it was, it was pretty full on, wasn't it? It was
brutal. And that's the point where people really started to question the way India played T20 cricket. It took them that long, right?
Yeah, that's probably right. There's one other game that would, just to finish off here before we go through everyone's picks, is I thought a really interesting game was in 2016 when South Africa made 229 and England chased it down. It's not talked about much at the time, but I remember I was in a bar in Kolkata with Tim Wigmore and we were watching that game just being like, it feels like every ball is being hit for a boundary. And it's now the kind of games that we're watching in the IPL, right? Like, yeah. And if you look at the players who were doing it, it was Hashim Amla, JP Duminy, Joe Root. Like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't really the sorts of players that you would be thinking of. So it really shows that, you know, there was that, it was obviously a great pitch and everything else, but it was that beginning of that sort of free up way of playing and that teams were scoring at a different level. All right, let's go through everyone's picks.
All right.
Estelle has come up with Misbah's lap, Sri Lanka's win in 2014, Rangana Harath 5-3 in 2014, Chris Gayle's 207-100, and Bangladesh's choke with Mushtafika Rahim in 2016. Bayram has gone Shahid Afridi's finals in 2009, Hussey versus Ajmal in 2007, Pakistan beating India by 10 wickets in 2021, Matthew Wade's death hitting in 2021, and India and Kohli beating Pakistan in 2022. I have gone, remember the name, the Dutch beating the England in 2009, the dual win in 2016, Yuvraj Singh's six sixes, and the bowl off. Yeah, I think Estelle, I reckon your Rangana Harath is too high and that you could have, even though it was on my list, I reckon you could have put that in a little bit lower. And Bayram's picks are just a thing of joy, really.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get shat on by both Pakistanis and non-Pakistanis in this one. They'll be like, you picked five moments in Pakistan, only one, two. And then the other people are going to be like, you picked five Pakistan moments.
Yeah, I love that. You've completely nailed it. What did someone call you on Discord the other day? The Simon Cowell of crick picks.
I missed that one. I'm going to go like it. And yeah, you guys let us know who did best and why I've won this one, because clearly I have. But yes, let us know your top 5 or even 10 iconic moments in T20 World Cup history in the comments section below. If you like this episode, give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube. And also, just a quick reminder that you guys can go to goodareas.co and that webpage is a one-stop shop for all of our podcasts, videos and written work. We'll be back with another episode of Crick Picks next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In 2 clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis.
Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.